listening to Turnout, opening up the dance scene in Toronto, London, and New York on CIUT 89.5 FM. This podcast was originally broadcast on September 28, 2016.
Good morning. Welcome to Turnout on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Nicole Hamilton, and joining me is
Małgorzata Nawaska.
And Samara Thompson is working behind the scenes today, and we are the hosts and producers of Turnout. Today on the show, Gillian Vanstone, principal dancer with National Ballet of Canada, will sit down with us to discuss World Ballet Day, which is occurring on October 1st. Rebecca Devi-Leonard of Balancing on the Edge will also join us to speak about the upcoming Nuit Blanche, also occurring on October 1st. And for the gadget of the week, we'll be reviewing and discussing the ever-so-popular app Waze. We'll be right back after this message, and you're listening to Turnout on CIUT 89.5 FM.
Okay! Tokyo!
South America!
Australia!
France!
Germany!
UK!
Africa!
Welcome back to CIUT 89.5 FM. You're listening to Turnout, opening up the dance scene in Toronto, New York, and London. And I'm here to talk about the World Ballet Day, which is returning. It's an annual event that happens on Tuesday, October the 4th. And what it is a live opportunity to see world-class ballet companies streamed live on Facebook. And it's a 20-hour event where each company takes a turn to share with audiences, with fans, with other dancers, an inside look at what it takes to be a dancer, as well as excerpts of the repertoire, class, and hopefully a little bit of inside conversation as well. So to talk about the World Ballet Day, today joining me is a principal dancer of the National Ballet of Canada, Gillian Vanstone. Welcome. Hello. So can you talk about what is your approach towards World Ballet Day? How do you feel about it?
Well, it's a lot of fun for us. I think it's a really great collaboration between, we have five companies around the world participating. The Australian Ballet, the Bolshoi Ballet, the Royal Ballet in London, and San Francisco Ballet. And, you know, for us, it's sort of, we try to keep things as natural as what every day would be for us, so that people are getting sort of the real inside scoop on what goes on every day. And for us here in Canada, it's a really great opportunity to also see what other companies are doing in places that are so far away.
And have you noticed any differences, or what? I'm sure there are differences. So what are they? What have you noticed?
Oh, between the different companies?
Yeah.
Well, what's sort of interesting is we can sometimes pick up a few tips, you know, certain fitness things that they were doing in Australia last year, you know, strengthening their calves in a certain way. So a few of us started applying some of their techniques. And it's interesting to see different teachers in class. We were able to do some of the exercises that they were doing and sort of learn from each other at the same time. And each company has a slightly different style. Anybody watching will maybe be able to pick out just a few stylistic differences that are very unique to each company. They're sort of hard to describe in words, but there may be, you know, a different way of using the upper body or a different emphasis in technique that we might emphasize something different over here.
And as a principal artist with a company, do you have a special role that you're taking on to...
Well, for this particular World Ballet Day, we're working on both Cinderella and Onegin, and I will be, for the second time, dancing the title role in Cinderella, and that's been fun revisiting it with my partner. The partnering is very complicated in this production, and we were just saying yesterday how the first time we did it, it took us so long to work on all the mechanics and the technique, and then yesterday in our rehearsal, we realized that a lot of it was coming back much more quickly, and so that was very exciting. And on Onegin, I play the role of Olga, which is the title role's youngest sister, and it's one of my favorites to dance. Onegin isn't as well known of a title as Cinderella, of course, but it's certainly one of my favorite ballets, and you know, the story is great, and the dancing is beautiful, and the music is beautiful, and it's something that I've really enjoyed returning to time and again.
What is it about it that makes it your favorite?
I think the story is, you know, it has a really good arc character-wise. You know, my character begins as just a young woman in love, and, you know, eventually follows... through the story to the tragedy of her fiancé's death. So as far as character goes, there's a lot of depth to it. And also the dancing is challenging, but very organic feeling, and the pas de deux work is very beautiful, and it gives me an opportunity to really make a connection with my partner, which is always something that I enjoy. I prefer... the partnering work above everything else is kind of my favorite thing to do.
So if you had to choose three favorite things that made you fall in love with ballet, what would they be? I'm guessing partnering would be
number one. Oh, it's hard. probably the very first thing from when I was a child was the music. The first lessons I did were really just movement with music, sort of. It was a Parks and Rec week-long lesson, actually. So music, definitely. Like I say later on, you know, the partnering work became really one of my favorite things. I love having, you know, creating a role with a partner that I really trust and get along with, and that's very exciting for me. And geez, the third one, you know, I suppose it's also sort of the camaraderie I have with the group of people I work with. You know, every day we work very closely together, and I've developed very close relationships with all my colleagues, and that grows with every year. I mean, some of the people I work with I've known since I was 12 years old at the ballet school, and they're sort of like brothers and sisters to me at this point.
That's great. And if you were to, are there any secrets that you could talk about that are involved in partnering that an audience might not know happen backstage for you or during a rehearsal?
I suppose maybe what a lot of people don't see is the very beginnings when we're working on something. Like I say, the first time I was dancing Cinderella, the partnering is very complicated. And, you know, what the audience always sees the finished product, and they don't see the amount of time, especially working with another person, that it takes to coordinate. And, you know, the number of times that we end up on the floor, the number of times that I accidentally, you know, hit his nose or something like this. And so that takes a lot of work. And I think also what people don't see when they're only seeing the finished product is the amount of time it takes to make the emotional connection with someone else as well, which is really the most important part. I mean, that's where the storytelling is coming in. And really the most important thing for me with a partner is the trust that you develop between each other, and really the knowledge of how the other moves. You get a real sense of the other person. And eventually, you know, there's certain partners now that I've been working with for years, and we know each other so well in the way that we move, and we almost become able to read the other person before they do something, or instinctually, if something goes a little bit off, we know exactly what the person's going to do to fix it. And those are when the partnering relationships become much deeper, and you develop sort of as a couple, obviously just in a professional capacity, but, you know, you do become very close to the people that you're working with. And but that takes a lot of work, and I think that's really what people will see in something like World Ballet Day is that time that it takes to work things out that they never see in the final product, because hopefully on stage we've made it look very easy.
Yes. Always. So what happens hypothetically if in your non-professional life, let's say it's someone that you don't actually maybe, you wouldn't choose them to be your friend and there isn't a natural connection. So how do you bring it? Do you have any tools that you use for yourself to create the magic? Because, you know, as a performer, it still has to look authentic.
Yeah, I think that usually we can find at least some sort of common ground. I mean, I've been very lucky with the people I've been partnered with. You know, I've had some really wonderful partners over the years. But some, you know, we started off not knowing each other so well, and it takes a little bit of time to get to know the other. And, you know, they may not be somebody that outside of work I spend a lot of time with. But generally we can find, you know, a bit of a common ground, even just if we end up only talking about ballet most of the time. But certainly it can take a bit longer if I'm not already friends with somebody or don't know them well. But, you know, there's sort of this natural progression that happens in rehearsals. And at a certain point, we have to be open to being vulnerable with each other and letting ourselves go. And that's something that comes with practice and experience as well. But I think that, you know, when we go into the room as professionals, there's a certain level of understanding that we are going to be very open with each other. And that's when people take really great care with each other's emotions and vulnerabilities. And, you know, we forgive each other quickly if the other one messes up or things like that. And I think that's really important. And especially when somebody's starting out, I've worked with partners who aren't as experienced. And, you know, it takes more hours to do that. And we have to try and try again. And I'm perfectly happy to work with somebody if they're willing to work hard and, you know, don't have any problem trying again. And that's something that can be really exciting, actually, is seeing somebody develop as a partner and develop into a role. So sometimes those are the most gratifying experiences, actually. And I think because I work with people of varied backgrounds coming from many different countries, and we all have different interests outside of dance, I've learned from a very young age to be open and interested in different types of people. And coming from the ballet school, where I graduated with a class of only 13 people, I was forced to spend time with people who had different opinions than me and different interests. And so I think that was a very valuable thing to learn at a young age. And I then became exposed to interests I didn't really know I had. So whereas I would have maybe naturally gravitated to people who were exactly like me had I gone to a larger school, I learned very young to get along with and open myself up to people of varied interest.
And what about advice? If you could give advice to younger dancers in ballet or something that could even translate to any genre, what would it be?
I think just hard work. It's a wonderful profession, and there's a lot of very exciting things about it. But really, you know, I've seen some very talented people try to coast on talent, and it will only take them so far. And I've seen people with not as much natural talent, but they work like crazy and end up surpassing everybody. And I think it's really the challenge of this profession is the dedication to come in every day and work when you're tired, or work when the day before you had a really lousy rehearsal and you feel discouraged, or, you know, come in and work after you had the best show of your life because you still want to get even better. You know, and it's kind of the day in and day out continuing to move forward. I think there's a lot of misconception about the idea of the instant star nowadays, and it's not popular to show the determination and the grit that goes behind that. And there's this sort of myth of the overnight success. And I think often people feel like, oh, if they have to work at something, that must mean they're never going to be good at it, because look at this person who had the overnight success. If you're not naturally this way, you must not be able to make it. But I just don't believe that's true. I think the people that really make it are the ones that work the hardest.
Great. Well, thank you very much. That's beautiful advice. And thank you. We're actually out of time.
Okay.
So I've been talking to Jillian Vanstone, principal dancer of the National Ballet of Canada, and we're talking about the World Ballet Day, which is happening October 4th. And to tune in to World Ballet Day, it is streamed live on Facebook. So if you're connected to Facebook, all you need to do is type in World Ballet Day, and then you will find the event. It has a blue icon. So thank you very much for tuning in, and we're going to be right back.
The sound of your city, CIUT 89.5, Toronto. Listen to us on the go with TuneIn Radio's free app, or go to the live stream at www.ciut.fm. Right here, right now, every day. CIUT 89.5 FM.
Welcome back to Turnout on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Nicole Hamilton, and with me again is...
Małgorzata Nowacka.
Now, dance artists use a huge array of interesting, useful, and sometimes bizarre gadgets to get their job done. And each week, we highlight a new tool and some kind of gizmo that attracts our curiosity. And this week, we will be talking about the ever-so-popular Waze app. Now, Mal, tell us, what exactly is Waze?
Well, Waze is the best traffic navigation tool that I know of. Actually, Google Maps is connected. They're connected together, so I think they're getting the same data from what I heard. But what it does is essentially when you're in a car or vehicle, you, instead of having just the GPS that tells you where to go, Waze is going to calculate the quickest route based on weather, based on traffic jams, based on, you know, a tree falling on top of the road. So anything new that happens that could possibly obstruct your way, Waze is going to recalculate your route. But the best thing about it actually is the safety. Because let's just say you are in a car. You should have left the house 15 minutes ago, but everything in your life went dramatically wrong. So you're leaving late. You get into your car and suddenly you're in this turbo crazy mode where you need to rip to where you're going like a maniac. Waze is going to tell you how long it will take you to get there at your current speed. So instead of, you know, stressing and thinking, when am I going to get there? What's going to happen? You already know when you're going to get there. So there's no, you can calm down, be in your vehicle, stay all relaxed and just stay at the right speed. You know, you don't, whereas if you don't know when you're going to arrive, it just creates that sense of uncertainty and additional stress. So I think it actually does help to control that sense of panic when you're on the road and you feel like you want to teleport, but you can't.
Now I'm going to ask you the question that everyone's probably wondering, given how wonderful this app sounds. How much is it? Is there a cost?
Okay, I should know this.
Now, my understanding is that Waze is free, which would be absolutely fabulous. With regards to the app itself, what about dance artists? Why is it best for us to get something like this?
Well, Nuit Blanche is coming up, as we know, and it's going to be featured on our next topic. And it's good to know, right? Like when you're going to rehearsal, when you're living your life, when you're trying to get to a show, there's nothing nicer than just knowing exactly when you're going to get there.
All right. Now, downloading is relatively easy. Most of us can download, if we have a smartphone, we can download from the Play Store. But the great thing about Waze is that you can also download it from their website as well. Now, we mentioned that it's ever so popular. You know, over 100 million individuals are using this app, Mal. And I understand that you've used it before.
Well, I've used it remotely by being stressed out in a car and checking Waze every, you know, 3 seconds to see when we're going to arrive at our destination.
Right. Now, does it have a talking feature? Will it talk back to you?
Yeah, it can talk. It can also talk and give you directions. I don't know if it has different voices, which is most of these things do. And I should just install it on my phone. And it seems to be free for install. So,
Very easy. And what I also like is, you know, there have been some great reviews on it. Some of the reviews have included that it's the best app to drive on a short or a long distance country trip, pardon me. Which would make it great for those dancers and individuals who are traveling long distances for auditions, etc. The GPS is extremely accurate, mm-hmm. which can sometimes be hard.
I don't know, a few years back, I'm not going to mention which app it was. It rhymes with Google. But there are a few cases where people would be like, I'm somewhere, I don't know where I was. I follow Google. But I think that has really improved. And I haven't heard anything from anyone for a few years now. And obviously, the accuracy of the GPS is important to trust.
Excellent. All right. And you can send your ETA and real-time drive to update those that you are meeting, which is one of the fantastic features. It learns your frequent destinations, commuting hours, and preferred routes. It also finds the cheapest fuel on your route. How fantastic is that? It adds information on local places and businesses that individuals can go to on their trip. So all in all, a pretty fantastic app to get.
Yes.
All right.
Yes, we love Waze.
We love Waze. Dirtout loves Waze. All right. So thank you for listening. We hope that you enjoyed our talk about Waze. Download it now. We'll be right back after this break with Turnout on CIUT 89.5 FM. Welcome back to Turnout on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Nicole Hamilton, and our next guest, Rebecca Devi Leonard, is the artistic director of A Girl in the Sky Productions, which is a contemporary circus company with roots in physical theater. This October, the company will collaborate with Thin Edge New Music Collective for the upcoming Nuit Blanche, occurring on October 1st. Welcome to the show, Rebecca.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, we're happy to have you. One of the first things that I wanted to start with is, how did you get started in the field?
So my background is in theater arts. I actually went to theater school here in Toronto at Ryerson. And then I came out of theater school and I went to the ROM looking for an agent at an agency party. There I saw this incredible performance of Aerial Fabric, which I think everyone has seen today, but at that point it was a relatively new thing. I don't think it had been sort of on the scene for very long, and I was mesmerized, and I thought to myself, this is what I want to do as a performer. And so I sought it out, and I started taking classes here in Toronto with a woman, Marcia Kennington, who had started a school here. And because of my theater experience, within 6 months, she had put me up in the air, and I was performing circus, and it's been a 20-year experience.
Now, what exactly is physical theater? How would you define that?
Physical theater is storytelling using the body, and it's a little bit more less like theater that's really rooted in text-based information. So you're using the body, you're using physical props, and it's a little bit more extreme in the storytelling. I've seen some incredible physical theater where they use ladders and you're climbing up on the tops of the ladders. You really need to be in top physical condition, and your instrument is you're using your body a bit more holistically. So, you know, at the Shaw Festival, for example, you might see a lot of plays by Oscar Wilde and, you know, some of those classical theater storytellers. And it's very important to be able to articulate using your voice, using your words. But with physical theater, you need to use your body to express.
What type of unique training would be involved to do physical theater?
I think there's a lot of different modalities that we would engage in. I think you can use clown dance. With the circus arts, we also used mime and using our bodies. Like, how do you create physical space using your body and create a space for your audience so they understand where they are? So, yeah, there's a lot of different interdisciplines that come together to create physical theater.
All right. And this October, your company will be collaborating with Thin Edge New Music for Nuit Blanche.
Yes, that's correct.
Now, we should mention that Thin Edge New Music Collective is a company that believes that contemporary music is a powerful medium, which has the ability to comment and reflect on modern society in a unique and poignant way. How did the two companies come together?
So the way that we came together is through a circus festival that I co-produce with a woman named Brandon Leary. And some of the members of Thin Edge New Music Collective came to one of our productions. So we produce sort of cutting edge new circus at our circus festival in order to push the ideas of what is circus. So they came to see us perform and members of our community perform. I also attended a fundraiser that they were hosting, and that was through the invite of Stacey Dunlop, one of our featured artists in Balancing on the Edge. She was living in this artist building that I live in and where we're hosting our Nuit Blanche event, which is on Stirling Road. It's called Collective Space. So they came to see us. I came to see them. We were both incredibly inspired by, you know, the edges that we were both reaching towards in our perspective art forms. And we were like, we have to create something together because we're both doing the same things, but in our own art forms.
And the collaboration will be presenting Balancing on the Edge. Now, what exactly is Balancing on the Edge? What can individuals expect?
So I think actually Balancing on the Edge, we picked this partially due to the inherent edge pushing of our art forms, but it's also something that I think that we can all relate to as human beings. We're all constantly on the edge and having to adapt to new situations and evolve to deal with our environments. And so we've actually asked six different boundary-pushing circus artists that are known for their history of creating very interesting work to explore what it means to be balanced on the edge through their artistic lens. And the pieces that have come out of this are very interesting and very diverse. We've got one piece that's about bicycle accidents and the soul transitioning consciousness. We have another piece that's about hysteria and sleeplessness caused by motherhood, and what it means to be in that world with your child and balancing life and nurturing and all of that. We've got another piece that is exploring technology and connection and disconnection and how do we relate and communicate with each other when we're interfacing through technology. There's another piece that's exploring, this goes back even, you know, further in history to explore tectonic plates and magma and, you know, the earth being on the edge of becoming this solid form that supports life. Another piece that's exploring grief and how hands, helping hands come and support us. And that's going to be integrating projection and live video performance with hands being underneath the artist, so the projection of the hands is going to be supporting the artist who's in the air. And then the last piece is a piece called My Complicated Relationship to Circus. So looking at the underpinnings of traditional structure and form and how one can enter into that from this new perspective where we're, you know, exploring decolonialization and, you know, we're on the edge of environmental disaster. And how do you fit that into a traditional circus structure? So, I mean, this is the wide range of approaches that we're going to be experiencing through this program. And I should tell you that this is actually, the Nuit Blanche is going to feature four of these programs, four of these pieces on the evening, and it's going to be a little bit of a work in progress. We've been developing this show for the past 2 years, and so this will be the culmination of 8 months of the artists working with the musicians, and then it'll be pushed even further in November, where we're presenting in association with Harborfront at Harborfront Center Theater as part of the Next Steps Festival.
So. Do you find that in doing a piece that is so deep in emotional content, do you find that that can somehow impact your artists to present differently each time?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because each piece is going through its own narrative, whether it's a journey, a metaphorical journey through an idea, or whether it's actually like a narrative story. And so every single time we go through that, I mean, we're underpinned with the thoughts and the emotions that occur from those thoughts every single time. And it's also based on relationships. So if you're actually responding in the moment to these thoughts and ideas and you're in relationship, then it's not going to be the same every single time. It's always going to be different. And yeah, it's been a very emotional process creating these pieces because we are digging quite deep into some pretty heavy ideas.
Is any part of the program based on personal history?
Definitely. The bicycle accident piece is inspired by a dear friend of mine who passed away here in Toronto. And sorry, I get emotional thinking about it every single time. So that piece is inspired by her and dedicated to her, as well as to my boyfriend's brother who also passed in a bicycle accident. So I think That piece is particularly emotional for, I think, everyone involved in that particular piece. So anyway, that's definitely rooted in a real personal experience. But I also feel like I'm trying, through that piece, we're trying to also convey a sense of hope, because I don't believe that that's the end. And my experience interacting with the woman who did pass through the bicycle accident, she was an incredibly transformational human being who impacted so many people and continues to impact people long after her passing. So my intent with this piece is to explore this idea, but also to leave us with a feeling of hope.
And I applaud you. I really do. I applaud you, because one of the things that sometimes, individuals who are watching artists on stage may not realize that, yes, some of it may be based on personal experience. Mm-hmm. But what's fantastic about what you're doing is it will allow the audience to also have a deeper connection with what's happening on stage and possibly even relate to what's being presented. Now, this program is going to be taking place also at a unique time of day as well.
Yes, it is. So from sunset to sunrise at Nuit Blanche, which is going to be this incredible arts event, Toronto is going to come alive with arts. And I'm so excited by this incredible opportunity to share with the people of Toronto at this eclectic arts event that only happens once a year. We're going to have presentations on the hour every hour from 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. I want to add that you can find out more information at www.nbto.com about all of the amazing arts events that are happening tonight, or that night, not tonight. I'm already there, but that are going to be happening on Saturday night. And I encourage everyone to just go out and explore, because this is such an incredible opportunity to see over 90 different art installations with 300 local and international artists who are going to be presenting. And it's all for free. That is the most amazing part, is that it's all for free. And you can just set your agenda and wander through the city and have this magical experience. We're a little bit off the beaten path of the Nuit Blanche perimeter, but we encourage you to come out and check us out if you want a little break from all of the crowds. I think it's just such an incredible opportunity to see some mind-blowing art.
Of course. Yeah. And for your company, the two companies that have come together to collaborate amongst the three, more than 300 other artists that will be there. Exactly how many artists are performing in your particular program? What can we expect?
So, in our larger program, we have 40 artists performing. But on the night of Nuit Blanche, I believe that we are going to have about 20 different artists performing. And that includes musicians, circus artists, and video artists. So it's very interdisciplinary. We're going to be showing four of our different pieces, as I said, that are going to be a part of the overall Balancing on the Edge program. We are also going to have a confessional booth, an interactive confessional booth for people to come in and share their Balancing on the Edge experience. And it'll be very witness protection style. So we'll have like a photograph kind of blurred out that we're going to be projecting and visually and then sonically into the space when we don't actually have a piece going on, because we want to really find that connection between the public experience and then the artistic interpretation of the experience. There's also, I'm not going to give it away, but we do have also like a surprise interactive experience. So you're going to just have to come on out to our site to find out what that is. But you'll be able to have your own Balancing on the Edge experience.
And working with a group that mm-hmm. is so heavily focused on other disciplines, how has that impacted your career? Have you found that you've learned much from working with another interdisciplined organization or company?
Yeah, so what's very interesting is that I've realized that contemporary musicians are just as insane as circus artists. We both travel around with extreme amounts of equipment. We both really need unique spaces to practice our art form, and we both work these crazy long hours in order to perfect and hone what we're offering out into the world. And I should also mention that I'm working with a video artist, two video artists as well, Jason J. Brown and this other gentleman who's working with Emily Hughes from Hercynia Arts. And both of those, they're also spending long times in the studio creating their art. So it's like this realization that we're all kind of working at our limits, and we're all working in these very extreme ways to create our work. So it was actually more finding those similarities in how we were working. And then a deep appreciation for the virtuosity of the other artists involved.
Have you found that there has been a unique type of preparation that needs to take place in order for you to get ready for Nuit Blanche and working with a company that is so different from yours?
Yes, definitely. We've had to, the musicians worked preparing kind of the music on their own, and we were preparing kind of our scores on our own, and then coming together, it was that like deep listening that's required. So there was like a gathering of all the stuff in one space. So I'm so incredibly grateful to Collective Space, which is right next door to my studio, for being there, because it provided us with that that safe space to come together and start knitting together these offerings that we've both brought. And I think that's what's so unique, is that you have to find those links and those meeting points, and then they're down on the ground looking at their music, listening and watching and playing, and we're up in the air focusing on our score and connecting with them. And it's this very, very unique relationship that's happening.
I do want to ask you, you know, if we can take a step back and talk about your artistry in terms of the circus work. What types of challenges have come along the way for you as an artist? As you know, as artists, we get older and we start to change, and many different things impact us. What kind of challenges have come up for you as an artist in circus work?
So as an artist in circus work, the challenges that I've personally encountered is, yes, physical injury. So it is very demanding and rigorous on the body. I spent a little bit of time over the last few years recovering from a shoulder injury, and I just unpacking what that injury was took quite some time. But, you know, we rely heavily on body workers who patch us up and say, you don't need to stop working, just work like this, work in alignment. And the other thing, too, with circus arts is, you know, it came from a tradition of circus families. And then I would say in the last 25 years, it's really been kind of making its way into the mainstream and making its way into a place where we are starting to understand the stressors and strains on the circus body. And that's been really unique. So we've been learning how to work differently with our bodies and body balance and deal with injury. And these weren't necessarily in the deep-rooted traditions of circus arts. You know, modern information on healing the body has now overtaken circus arts. And I also teach as well. So it's changed how I teach, just because of the experiences I've had with my own body through my career. And then we're also dealing with like new apparatus, and how does that impact the body? So aerial fabric, for example, was a very new apparatus. And so how that impacted my body, I began to understand, like, oh, okay, it's this flamenco hand movement that I've been doing for the past 20 years that has placed my shoulder in a poor position, and now I have to replace my shoulder so that I can continue working as an artist. So, yeah.
Now, what would you say to an individual who would like to get into circus work? What thoughts would you share with them before they entered?
So I was listening to your National Ballet guest, and I would say very similar things. It's not the amount of talent. It's really connected to the amount of hard work you want to put into it. Make sure that you have a good support system, because it's not necessarily going to be, a financially easy path. I would also say that be prepared to make your own work and to discover your own voice through circus arts. You kind of have a couple of options. You can train and you can become a part of a larger company that's pre-existing, or you can take another path. If you're wanting to create as an artist, then you could take the other path, which is to create your own work or find other artists to collaborate with. So there's kind of like two kind of strands that you can go. I've chosen to create my own work, and I find that incredibly fulfilling. But I've had many, many colleagues who are working on shows and with some of the larger companies, and they love that work as well. So it's just a lot of dedication. Have a backup plan as well, because your body doesn't last forever. So, I mean, you can definitely find work within the milieu after the fact. But you also might want to start young, have a really brilliant circus career, and then go on to something else. And that's an option as well. The body is an incredible instrument, and it can do amazing things. And there's contortionists who are like, 75 these days, but it requires dedication, constant, rigorous practice, and an awareness on how to maintain a healthy body.
All right. Yeah. And we are just about out of time, but where can individuals find out more about what is coming up next for Balancing on the Edge?
So you can find us at www.balancingontheedge.com. You can also find us on Harborfront's Next Steps. We're part of that program. And you can also search us on Facebook, of course. Please just come on out to the Nuit Blanche event, because actually that is where you're going to get the best idea of what we're doing and what we're about. And you can pick up a flyer or you can buy a ticket to our Harborfront Center show there as well. So I just encourage you to just like come on out, enjoy Nuit Blanche, and come visit our website or come visit us in person.
Wonderful. Well, thank you for joining us on the show.
My pleasure. Thank you.
We've been speaking with Rebecca Devi Leonard, Artistic Director of A Girl in the Sky Productions, who will be presenting with Thin Edge New Music for this upcoming Nuit Blanche. This is Turnout on CIUT 89.5 FM. We'll be right back after this break.
Salvação. Viva a cultura. now.
Welcome back to Turnout on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Nicole Hamilton, and back with me is...
Malgorzata Nowacka.
And we've been talking about everything Malgorzata, World Ballet Day, and Nuit Blanche. And I should mention, just a correction, that World Ballet Day takes place on October 4th, not the 1st. I believe in the opening, I actually said that it takes place on October 1st in my excitement. I mentioned the 1st, but it's indeed on the 4th.
Yes.
Now, Malgorzata, you have actually presented in Nuit Blanche before. What has your experience been?
Well, Nuit Blanche is extraordinary, and it's such a great idea, and it's like a phenomenal. It's amazing that we have this. So every single year is completely different. It feels like we have, I don't know, like different energy in the city. Depending on which area of the city you go to, it feels like a different universe. And the amount of art and the range of art, from strange to wonderful to exceptional to mind-boggling to completely puzzling, just creates this incredible mix of experience. So as a performer or a presenter in Nuit Blanche, logistically, it is not the easiest thing because the duration is so long. And as dancers, as performers, our bodies, they all have like an expiration date, you know, around 10 p.m. where everything becomes very tiring. And it just to sustain that until 1 or 3 in the morning is an incredible challenge. So I really appreciate all the performers that are in it. And it's so amazing that they're doing this to share their work.
And are you excited about World Ballet Day? I certainly am.
Yes, 20 hours of ballet from all over the world in backstage, front stage. It is amazing.
It's going to be fantastic. And again, it takes place on October the 4th.
And it's on Facebook, so it's streamed live on Facebook. And all you need to do is go to Facebook and type in World Ballet Day, and it will take you to the event page, which is going to go live on October 4th. And I also would like to thank a lot Jillian Vanstone from National Ballet of Canada, who was here earlier on the show talking about it.
Yes, and our wonderful guest, Rebecca, as well, who spoke quite a bit about Nuit Blanche, Rebecca Devi Leonard, and what to expect there as well. Great. So we've had a full show. And you've been listening, of course, to Turnout on CIUT, opening up the dance scene on CIUT 89.5. We are the producers and hosts of the show, and we'd like to, at this time, not only thank our guests, but our wonderful tech, Mr. Ariel Simonte. And we would love your feedback. We can be reached by email at turnout@ciut.fm. And do connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We thank you for listening, and we hope your week finds you turning out in dance.
for listening to Turnout, opening up the dance scene in Toronto, London, and New York on CIUT 89.5 FM. This podcast was originally broadcast on September 28th, 2016.